Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app. Or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. Let's bring him in, our favorite resident general manager, and that is Mike Tenenbaum. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
We're hanging in there as best we can. A lot of stories around the NFL. Not a lot of them are great stories right now. Let's start with the one that clearly affects the Giants in a big way with DeAndre Baker. I guess you were GM, front office guy. Walk us through how you handle something like this if you are in the front office, if you are the Gettlemans of the world, if you are the Giants front office, how you handle what's going on right now with DeAndre Baker.
Well, you really need to be thorough and make sure you find out exactly what happened. And what's always interesting is, guys, whether this is player-driven or attorney-driven, the more the attorney is layered in early in the process, the more your radar goes up that he has something to hide, the more candid, transparent, and honest he is, the more he's probably innocent. So one of the things that I think we've all learned over the years is there's two sides to every story, and oftentimes the truth is in the middle. Candidly, this one's kind of interesting to me because if I'm Joe Judge, in the back of my mind, this is an opportunity to lay the grounds for law and order. And I'm not saying that he's not going to be fair, but I think the benefit of the doubt that the lens of Joe Judge's benefit of the doubt is going to be discernibly different than maybe Dave Gettleman's would be.
Mike T, and just to continue with the whole DeAndre Baker thing. So before the draft, leading into the Giants, you know, trading away the three picks to get up in the first round and select him, there were some red flags. As a GM, I know you guys picked Laremy Tunsil and you did your due diligence, but are there any certain, you know, red flags that would completely take a player off of your board?
Absolutely. And I think really what comes down to, Rick, is, you know, is it a pattern of behavior or is it a good person that made a mistake? And that's always the lens that you try to make these decisions. In Tunsil's case, you know, his was pronounced and it was national, you know, the mistake he made. But we had a lot of good information and we were proven right on that decision that he was a good person that made a mistake. So I think, and we've talked about this before, but I'm steadfast in my belief that who you are in life is how you treat people that can't help you. The waiter, the waitress, the equipment manager, the trainer. So I think for something like this, I want to talk to DeAndre Baker's trainer, and I want to talk to the equipment guy. I want to talk to the academic advisor. I want to see his level of commitment, maturity, judgment. And those are the decisions. When no one's looking in Athens, Georgia, that's really who he is. So the context of making those decisions has to include a lot of those sources.
Mike T, the NFL owners are supposed to meet today and implement new changes to the Rooney Rule. I want to get your thoughts on the initial proposal and then what you think is at the heart of the matter when it comes to hiring, you know, minority candidates at the highest levels of these organizations.
Yeah, Chris, obviously this is a critically important topic, and I'm very proud of being part of the group that hired Herm Edwards at the Jets. We had a successful run with Herm. Chris Greer, the general manager in Miami, and they were clearly the best people for those jobs when we hired them. And I would say more fundamentally when I look at this, I understand that there's reasons to try to adjust the rules, and I understand the adjustments, but more fundamentally to me is going back to the very beginnings of getting more qualified candidates, minority women, in the pipeline earlier. So because I think right now what the league is trying to do, understandably, is try to put a Band-Aid on it, but how do we solve the wound? And I think the best way to do that is to start at the lowest levels, increase minority internships, entry-level jobs, give gender-diverse opportunities. And I think there's been some progress, but you know, we need to see a lot more of it and quicker. And I think once you see that, Chris, if we're having this discussion in 2 to 3 years, hopefully we're going to see discernibly improved results.
Mike T, just as a follow-up to that, Anthony Lynn had some strong comments around this issue over the weekend, and one of the things that he said is that he believes that there are plenty of qualified assistant coaches of color in the National Football League that could be head coaches today. Last year, the NFL had 180 coaches participate in the Bill Walsh Coaches Fellowship Program. So I guess my point in saying all of those things is that it feels like we do have competent, qualified coaches in and around the National Football League that are capable of developing into successful head coaches. Why do you think they're not getting those opportunities?
Yeah, it's a really fair point. And Aylin is someone that I'm proud to say that I work with. When I was a coaching agent, I represented him. And he's earned the right. He's a great example of, Chris, a former player, worked his way up. Rex gave him an opportunity, the offensive coordinator in Buffalo, and obviously the rest is history. There should be more people that have real – I agree. There should be more minority candidates who are currently head coaches and GMs. And hopefully what we're going to see in the not-too-distant future, let's just take one team, for example, Tampa Bay. If they have any success this year, which by all accounts they will, given the quarterback they now have, both Todd Bowles and, in my opinion, Byron Leftwich will be very intriguing candidates to be head coaching candidates next year. So I think what happens is these candidates, and I was part of it, where guys get momentum. When we hired Adam Gase in 2016, he had a ton of momentum. And what let's all hope we're talking about when we get to January is, you know, Tampa Bay is on a roll, and now both of their coordinators on both sides of the ball, both minorities, both deservedly would have the opportunity to have very good, realistic chances to be head coaches in the next cycle.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I want to go back to this DeAndre Baker story with you quickly. What frustrates me the most about it is that there were red flags at the draft, and we've spoken with people who have said there were multiple teams that just said, he's not on our board. We won't take a guy like that. And then you read an article last week that says that there was real, you know, infighting with the Giants organization of whether they would take Baker, and some said no, not to take him and get him, and obviously ultimately won out. So my question to you is, I mean, normally if you draft a guy and something like this happens and it doesn't pan out, it looks bad. Doesn't it look even worse, though, for Gettleman because there were red flags before and because there were others within the organization that were hesitant to take this guy? You went ahead, you took him anyway, and now you're here.
Yeah, you know, on this one, Dave, I really see it differently because if it worked out, you know, people, Dave should get, you know, the credit just in terms of, hey, he's the head of the organization. But with that said, in fairness, he's not the only one making that decision. Like, I've never been in a draft room either as the decision maker in Miami, at the Jets, where I just said, you know, indiscriminately, F you to everybody. And, you know, I got 20 people that want me to do one thing and I do the other. That's not to say that it was close or whatever and I would go the other direction. I know Dave well enough to say this. Like, I would be floored if he just dismissed everybody else's opinion and went the opposite way. That's just not who he is. He's a leader. He's strong-minded. But I can't imagine that there were other people. I'm sure there were disagreements, but I can't imagine he was the only one that wanted Baker. And to the extent that you have to take risks, look, my track record is pretty public and pretty, you know, I would say, you know, picked over both positively and negatively. I've taken enormous risks that worked out. I've also traded for Tim Tebow that didn't work out, that hurt me professionally. And I think what happens is when you're the New York Giants and you're sitting there and you got to close the gap on unbelievable offenses like in Philadelphia, like in Dallas, and your defense stinks, you're going to take calculated risk. And I think that's acceptable. Now, I would not necessarily say DeAndre Baker hasn't worked out. I would give it a grade of incomplete. I would be monitoring this situation very, very carefully. But that's just something that you have to when you're trying to close the gap and you have, you know, Coach Parcells, Dave, talked about this all the time. Like, you have very limited sort of like arsenal to get better. Cap, draft picks. And if you have an A player sitting there in the bottom of the first round that you think could go cover Amari Cooper or could cover some of those weapons in Philadelphia, I can understand why he would do it.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, I know when it happened, we spoke to you right after the draft. Green Bay Packers made the decision to move up and draft Jordan Love. We heard from Aaron Rodgers for the first time. What did you think about Aaron Rodgers' comments regarding them making that draft pick of Jordan Love?
I thought he was saying the right things. I still, the more I think about it, Rick, that one really stuns me because you just paid Aaron Rodgers. You have to keep him for at least two more years. And I think the big difference between when Favre was the Packer quarterback and Rodgers was picked and this situation is Green Bay did a couple of things. They gave up a fourth round pick to go get Love. I just don't understand how he can get on the field for at least 2 years, and they didn't get the receiver, and they downgraded at right tackle. They were one game away from being in the Super Bowl. You have a Hall of Fame quarterback. I just don't understand it. I understand why you need another quarterback. There were times in my career I didn't do a good enough job with the depth at quarterback, but to proactively trade up for a guy and not address the other needs, I don't understand that.
Mike T, with NFL teams beginning to open up their facilities this week, I guess the question becomes, what will they do in terms of organized team activities or mini camps as this happens? Or is it more realistic to think that teams are just going to prepare to get ready for training camp?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter, Chris, just in talking to people around the league. I think realistically, what we're going to see at the end of the day is teams really get ready for training camp. You know, Sean Payton came out pretty clearly and said, hey, you know, I'm not doing anything before training camp. Now, look, you can do that when you and Drew Brees have been together for a decade. And, you know, Joe Judge and all these other new coaches, they need every rep, every meeting, everything they can get their hands on. So, but I do think, and I thought Mike Tomlin was a real thought leader, you know, when he talked about, you know, one of the great things about our sport, guys, is all 32 teams, in theory, are the same cap, draft picks. And to have one team be able to go into a facility and not another, that kind of gets away from the fundamental notion of what, like, we love about our league. So my sense of it is, at the end of the day, we'll see training camp. But I would be surprised if we saw a lot going on before then.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Where are we? We see the video now, Roethlisberger. He shaved the beard. He says he's in good health. What is your expectation for him? I mean, he's an older quarterback coming off a major injury to his throwing arm. You think he gets back to where he was or close to it?
Well, Dave, good gosh. The first thing is my expectations are we all need new things in our life. If we're talking about someone shaving a beard, you know it's a slow news cycle. I mean,
well, listen, like, facial hair has exploded during this quarantine time.
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, there's some places you couldn't work, including for, you know, Coach Parcells back in the day. You know, it was, and I would say there were some other, let's just say environments I was in where facial hair was strongly, strongly discouraged, but I digress. However, I would be a little concerned if I was Pittsburgh for two reasons. A, and this was my concern about Tua coming out of the draft. You have a guy that's 38, been hurt. Those guys usually don't get healthier. And going back to Tua for a second, he was a guy that had been hurt multiple times, and that's not to say he can't have a great career, but oftentimes your prior track record is a good indicator of what could happen in the future. And what I would say about Pittsburgh in particular is we traded away Josh Dobbs, who I really like. I think he has a chance to be a good backup, maybe a low-level starter. Mason Rudolph isn't good enough. Delvin Hodges isn't good enough. So now you're sitting there, 38, injury-prone, bad elbow, and you don't have anybody behind him. That's why, to me, the guy that makes a ton of sense there, and I said this before, is Cam Newton. Why would you not take a flyer on a guy that has taken a team to the Super Bowl, been the first pick in the draft, and if he's healthy, he's, what, 7 years younger than Roethlisberger? You may have your next quarterback right there without giving up a draft choice.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike, in your opinion, so we had the pass interference rule, the review rule, which was a complete, debacle. So that let that run its course. I'm of the opinion that if you somehow could find a way to incorporate the sky judge or the referee up in the booth, that could be most effective. Why is there such resistance to adopting something like that?
I think what Sean Payton said was, you know, kind of enlightening, which is, I think the idea is there. Now it's the execution of the idea. And to me, what I would do is and this is where, like, we're going to miss things like the XFL or maybe in preseason where, again, you defer to the league office to say, hey, whatever the standards are, let's just be consistent about it. And I think where people were disappointed, myself included, was I think last year there were some obvious PIs that when challenged, the league didn't, for whatever reason, didn't want to interfere with the referees on the field. But it was clear to me that they should have, you know, thrown the flag from Park Avenue, and whatever reason they're reticent to do that. But I think, Rick, what you're saying is fair, it's logical, and I think within 2 to 3 years, I think that's going to be revisited.
Mike T, we were talking about the DeAndre Baker situation earlier and all the implications that would have for the player, but I wanted to know about the general manager, Dave Gettleman. In an offseason when the owner said he had to improve his batting average, I mean, this headline with Baker couldn't have done him any favors. How real or how hot is the seat for Gettleman coming into 2020?
Well, what's interesting to me, Chris, and again, we touched on this a little bit before, which is I think the whole notion of the benefit of the doubt is so different right now between Judge and Gettleman, just from a standpoint of, you know, look, let's face it, the better DeAndre Baker plays, the better that's going to help Dave Gettleman's security. So they are on, obviously, two different timelines. This certainly doesn't help. You know, the truth usually is the tiebreaker in these situations, but I've also seen new head coaches look for an opportunity to clear out the old. I mean, look at what, you know, Matt Rhule did. I mean, he just, from Greg Olson, you know, Kuechly, Cam Newton, Eric Reed, he got rid of all the leadership there and started fresh. And typically that's what new head coaches like to do. So I think whatever indiscretions DeAndre Baker, and let it play out, I think it, you know, if Joe Judge is going to look at those indiscretions much more significantly, I think, than Dave Gettleman will.
All right, Mike, listen, stay safe, stay healthy. We will talk to you next week. Have a good holiday weekend. We'll talk to you a week from today.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll be talking about things besides shaving, and I hope to see you guys in person, you know, sometime in the not-too-distant future as well.
That would be wonderful. That really
have
would
a
be
gorgeous, Mike T, I have a gorgeous mustache.
Oh, yeah.
That you're going to love it.
You see, facial hair is a big topic of conversation.
Well, man, I got to get up with the times, so maybe that's all.
Good stuff, Mike.
All right, well.
We'll talk to you. All right, thank you. Terrific. Terrific. I'm a big fan of Mike Tenenbaum. Now, by the
way,
what's
amazing? You know what's amazing, though? Mm-hmm. Just quickly, like reading a lot of this stuff with DeAndre Baker and this whole situation. I mean, you have his, and this is what he's supposed to do. I mean, it's his lawyer. How could you get it this wrong? Like, how could, I mean, he's charged with, you know, eight different, how could you get it that wrong if he's innocent?
Right.
That's the part of, that doesn't make any sense.
Unless they can get the eyewitnesses to flip, which I mean, you might be able to.
Well, maybe that's possible, but you're still going to have to deal with the NFL and the personal conduct policy. And at the very least, the fact that he was arrested, the fact that the Giants have told him to stay away from the virtual offseason, that suggests some wrongdoing on the player's part. So, I mean, even though he might not be guilty of a crime, I mean, it's still poor judgment, and it still reflects badly on Dave Gettleman and the Giants as an organization.
By the way, he just pled not guilty to all eight charges. So, I don't know.
Kind of feels like the truth is somewhere in the middle of this, doesn't it?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look good for him.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't look good for him, and it doesn't look good for Dave Gettleman. That's why I asked Mike T the question. I mean, you're talking about Dave Gettleman being on the hottest of hot seats as far as general managers go going into 2020. I mean, this is not something that helps his cause.
No.
Let me ask you a question, though. Let me ask you a question, right? We all expect that the Giants, especially under these circumstances, right, new head coach, new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. I mean, Eagles look like they got better. Once Dak Prescott is signed, they got better, right? So as far as wins and losses are concerned, this is not a team that's going to have this huge jump in wins, correct?
Well, I feel like the Giants are going to be a lot better. Now, I don't know how that would be reflected in the record, but I do expect them to be better than a five-win team.
Okay, which is fine. But let's just say, for example, because we keep saying that Dave Gettleman's seat is hot and the batting average and everything else.
Yeah. Right?
And that is probably true. But say the Giants win five games. Mm. Defense is trash because it's just not that good. But – and Dave, this is your hot take, so I'll give you credit. Saquon Barkley wins the rushing title.
Rushing title, yeah.
And Daniel Jones throws, you know, 28 touchdowns and 12 picks. They're going to fire Dave Gettleman?
I think they could.
But I think if those things happen, then the Giants have their record is going to be better than 5-11. You see what I'm saying?
Rick, it would be wins of what? Of 3, 4, 5-5 in four consecutive seasons?
Yeah, that's the part of it that you can't rationalize. Like at some point, you have to look at their general manager and say, you're not doing the job. Bill Parcells used to always say, you are what your record says you are. And if he would have gone, what is it, 3 consecutive seasons, 5 wins, 4 wins, 5 wins, that's just not good enough.
No.
I mean, you already have the worst record in the National Football League over the last 3 years. You're 12-36. They got to start doing some winning. I'm not saying they got to have a winning season, but they got to be damn close to being able to do that. I mean, it's got to be 7-9, 8-8. Like, I'm looking for the Giants to take a step forward like we saw the Jets last year. Maybe it doesn't look the exact same, but in terms of the overall improvement of the club and the improvement of the record, it needs to look like that. Otherwise, you're talking about having a new GM in 2021.
And be competitive, too. I mean, how many times did you watch the Giants last year? The game, it was non-competitive, right? That makes a big difference. I mean, if you win seven games and you're competing in 12 of the 16 games and there's only four that are, you know, get out from under you, I can live with that. You go 7-9 and you're a competitive team, I can live with that. You go 5-11, that's a bad season.
You can say it's a bad season, but it's going to come down to what it looks like.
But it's hard for me to envision, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, it's hard for me to envision 5-11 looking pretty good.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Dave.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I mean, you're probably more right than wrong. I'm just saying, I mean, I would have a hard time imagining that after all the criticism that Dave Gettleman took for drafting Daniel Jones at 6, the rookie season that he had, which was a great rookie season, he cleans up the fumbling issue, throws for, you know, like I said, 28, 30 touchdowns, you know, 10, 12 picks, and Saquon Barkley is the best running back in the National Football League.
Right.
I mean, that's not bad.
Something.
That's not bad, but I think that there's a direct correlation to those guys performing at that level and the team winning games. Like, I understand your defense is awful, but if Saquon Barkley leads the league in rushing, that means your offense is controlling time of possession, which means your defense isn't on the field. So to me, I just think if Saquon has the season that we are all expecting him to because of the improvements at the offensive line and because the quarterback is improving going from year one to year two, I just think you're going to see an improvement in the wins column.
From your lips to God's ears, because I'm not even a Giants fan, but I just think as far as, you know, New York sports is concerned, I mean, it would be nice to have
something.
Both football teams be good.
Rico, you know what? I am a Giants fan. I want the organization to do well. I've been pessimistic the last 3 or 4 years, I guess ever since I started working at this station. But for the first time in a long time, I feel like the Giants are actually going to take a step forward in the right direction. I feel like this is the season that they're actually going to kind of come out of this, I guess, malaise that has been this past decade of football.
Oh, God, I hope so. Now, it's been brought to my attention that Michael and Don, maybe Michael more so than Don, not thrilled with our the way we address Mike Tenenbaum on our show.
All three of them are calling him Mr. T.
Drove me crazy.
Well, what's going on with that? Who calls him Mr. T?
I text
Tenenbaum's not that hard to say, and Mike is certainly not that hard to say.
Not hard at all.
Let's call Mark Teixeira Mr. T from now on.
I don't want to do that either. So I texted
Ryan. Why do you think they do it?
I said, I'm getting a you-know-what chill hearing it time and time again. He thought it meant that I didn't like Tenenbaum. I was like, no, I don't like, I love
Tenenbaum.
He's a
terrific guest.
30 seconds later, Rick DiPietro asked a question and referred to him as Mr. T like 4 times. I'm like, all right, Ryan must have said something because now he's just trying to get under my skin. But I don't think so. I think that's just what they do.
I think it's an awful sound.
Taking shots. Now, first of all, I never call him Mr. T. Ever, ever, ever. You guys do. I don't know why it bothers them to that extent.
I thought he liked it.
Well, he might like it, but they don't.
I had no idea they didn't like it until I was told, and that's why I said it numerous times.
So Don is right. You got a text saying, do me a favor, don't call him Mr. T, and you said, yeah, sure, and you said it 5 straight times? See, that's why I love you. That's what happened, isn't it?
Listen, if I knew it bothered them, I had no idea that it bothered them until I did.
No
clue. But they sound so upset by it.
I thought Mike T originally liked it.
I can't even believe it's an issue.
I mean, I guess that's what happens in professional sports, though. You're in the locker room, you give people nicknames. I mean, even when it comes to the coaching staff and the front office people, you go by nicknames. Mike T, Mr. T, I don't see how that's a bad thing.
I just assume he liked necklaces, like he wore a lot of necklaces.
I don't take it as us being disrespectful to Mike Tenenbaum at all.
He didn't say anything.
No.
Santiago, has he once, when you pick up the phone to say thank you so much for joining us, said, like, listen, the Mike T's got to stop.
He's the nicest guy possible, so yeah. Even if it did bother him, he wouldn't say so.
Well, it bothers Michael and Don.
Should be calling him, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, we should be calling him Latte Larry with how, I mean, he just destroys.
Yeah, he could go on Man versus Food. Man versus beverage.
I've never seen anyone do an interview with a scalding hot latte and actually finish it like in the midst of answering the question.
Drank it in like 40 seconds.
As he was answering the question.
Yeah. It's a marvel. It's one of the great wonders of the world.
He can't, as soon as it touches his lips, he's got to finish it. He can't help himself.
Loves it.
Which made me feel good, though. I mean, if you're going to get someone a drink, I mean.
Right. I mean, he clearly appreciated it. He was not drinking it just to be nice.
Oh, no, no, no.
He was drinking it because he adored it.
Oh, attacked it.
Yeah.
I think it's the greatest chance
he's ever had. Today on ESPN Daily, the return of college football. Well, it's complicated. Paul Feinbaum gives his view on the obstacles, the options, and the financial stakes for hundreds of schools and thousands of players. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. Have you seen what a couple of schools are starting to do, by the way, guys, in the fall? They're starting earlier, eliminating any kind of a break during the semester and ending before Thanksgiving. I believe South Carolina and Notre Dame are the first two schools that have decided to do that.
Now, I'm assuming that that's because they anticipate a second wave when winter comes around.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they want to try to be as safe as possible and get the semester in. I think it's going to be really interesting, Dave, because you have some states that are saying that colleges won't be open to have students on campus in the fall. So I guess, you know, schools in different states are going to handle it as they see fit. But I think that puts college athletics and college football in particular in a weird spot. Just because you're going to have some schools that aren't going to be able to have students on campus in the fall. And if you don't have the students on campus, then how could you ask the student athletes to actually be there to play football? So
I don't think you can.
I don't see it. So I think we're in for this college football season being really, really different unless all of the schools can come to a consensus to push off the season until the spring semester. I don't anticipate that happening. So I think that it's going to be a lot different than we're used to seeing college football.
And then to make matters even worse, I don't know if you guys saw this yesterday. So Furman, which is not a tiny school, and Chris, you know, down in South Carolina.
Yeah, it's in the Carolinas, yeah.
They eliminated their baseball team and their men's lacrosse team. They no longer exist, which I think, sadly, is going to be a byproduct, a lot of what's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about economic Darwinism. And there are going to be some of the athletic programs within the athletic departments of these schools that they, you know, there are going to be some sports that they can't afford to keep around just because they're not getting the revenue from football. They're not getting the revenue from basketball. That changes things a little bit, Dave. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate to see it, but that's the reality of where we're at because of this pandemic. It's nobody's fault.
No, it's bad news though,
but It's unfortunate, Dave. That's what it is.
Very much so. All right, so let's get to Brian Windhorst has an interesting soundbite. We'll get to that in a second. Let me tell you, though, Rick, before we even go there, because I know you're a big guest guy, who's going to be on the show the rest of the day? You ready for this?
I am maybe not ready for it if it's that good.
It's good. It's good. 2 o'clock.
Hold on. Just let me brace myself. Okay, go.
Okay. 2 o'clock, Barton Hahn, big-time heavyweight boxer. Big-time.
Big-time heavyweight boxer.
Big-time. If I said to you one of the great heavyweight boxers in the last 30 years, this guy would roll off your tongue in the first.
Ooh. I'm going to go with... So last 30 years. This is not present. This is not... This
no.
Is not
although it may be. It may be once again.
Evander Holyfield.
Yes, Evander Holyfield. 2 o'clock with Barton Hahn.
Scary dude. We had him in studio. I want him to, but so I asked him, and he said no. But I asked him.
He wouldn't do it, right?
Yeah, I want him to punch me and Alan in the legs and see who could make it out of the studio first, like who could walk out. And he said no. He's afraid he would do serious damage.
So he could break your leg by hitting you with a glove?
Probably no. There's no glove. This was bare fisted. Not my leg. Alan tends to skip leg day, so maybe more likely he could snap his thigh bone,
which would be really unfortunate.
Good for me, though, because I would have been the first out of the studio.
Yeah, great, great for you. As your co-host is writhing on the floor in pain, weeping. Yes, very good for you. Now, the K Show, which begins, of course, today at 2:55, and there's a better than average chance they make fun of us during the show. But at 4 o'clock, one of the members of the 98 Bulls team, Scott Burrell, will be on the show. What'd you say?
Mr. B, yeah.
Yes, Scott B will be.
Mr. B, yeah.
Yeah, Mr. B, Scott B. We'll be on the show. And at 5 o'clock, Mr. Smith, Stephen A., will be
Ooh, on. Little Stephen A.
Stephen A. Well, he's got the show on ABC tonight, you know.
Oh, yeah, big show
tonight. He's going to recap The Last Dance. I believe he's on with Magic Johnson is going to be doing that with him. So that's it. ABC tonight. I think it's 8 o'clock with Stephen A. And little round table. So that should be good. Magic, Whoopi Goldberg, Stephen A. Smith, all break down The Last Dance.
We got to watch that. I mean, how do you not tune into that?
You have to.
That's not even a question.
I thought it was interesting that Brian Windhorst said that Jordan agreed to have the footage in the documentary start being produced after 2016. And he said that was the first time that Jordan felt like there was a threat to his throne as the greatest basketball player of all time. I think that was the right after LeBron James won the championship
when
in Cleveland.
Came back from 3-1, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, I thought that was interesting. And that's when Jordan signed off on.
Because he saw it. He saw what was happening. Because there was real conversation that is this guy the greatest to ever play the game? And Michael, and I mean, let's be fair, big ego guy, right? Obviously, and rightfully so, wanted to squelch any of that conversation.
I mean, listen, I get it. I can understand it. Michael Jordan feels like he's on a pedestal above everybody else, and whoever's second is a distant second. And I think that he tried to accomplish that in his docuseries to put some distance between him and the next best player of all time, no matter who it is, but in particular with LeBron. And I just felt like when you start looking at Michael's impact on the game of basketball – and what it has become today versus what it was when he came into the league in 84. I mean, to me, it would be so hard for LeBron James to have that same type of impact in terms of advancing the game to that degree. That's why I say in this whole thing when we're talking about who's going to be the greatest basketball player of all time when it's all said and done, when LeBron's career is over, I just think that no matter what he does, I think the best he can hope for is a tie in that situation. Just because of what Michael Jordan did. The game took a quantum leap, Dave, in terms of popularity, in terms of revenue, how it was played. It was just different.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no negative thing you can look at with Michael Jordan other than he left. But that almost made you desire him more.
Oh, it left a huge vacuum. That just showed you his impact and what he meant to the sport. I mean, think about it. When Michael Jordan came in, everybody was saying, well, even Clyde Frazier. Clyde Frazier said, you know what? Well, Michael Jordan, he's a great player, but he's not going to be able to have success because in this league, you got to have a big man. Okay. Where are we at today in the NBA? Does anybody really care about having a big man?
No, the game has completely changed.
It's completely different.
Even the big men aren't really big men.
That's my point, Dave. I don't know that LeBron James can revolutionize the sport the way that Michael Jordan did.
I mean, just how about the effect that, I mean, Michael Jordan, you heard some of the stuff LeBron James said yesterday on Uninterrupted. I mean, the effect that Michael Jordan had on LeBron James and what it was like for LeBron James to meet him for the first time, where he's like, I didn't even realize, like, it didn't feel like he really existed in real life, like he only existed on the television.
Yeah, because he's a larger-than-life figure. In fact, we have that audio. So let's play it from Uninterrupted, LeBron James, the first time he met Michael Jordan. He was a sophomore.
We walk up there, and the first person I see is Charles Oakley. You know, Oak being from Cleveland, dapped him up. I had seen Oak around the city a few times, you know. And Oak moved, and when he moves, Mike is sitting on the bench press. And I was like, oh, my God. I didn't think he was real, man. You don't understand. I didn't think Michael Jordan was real. I only thought he lived in the TV, either in games or commercials, or Come Fly With Me on cassette tapes.
Wow, yeah.
I didn't think he was real. And when I saw him, I was like, if the man above would have took me that day, I would have lived a hell of a life, I swear to God. That was the end of it. When I got back home to Akron, and I told my boys, and like my boys, because they know how crazy I am about MJ, they were like, nah, you're lying. I'm like, dog. I was, not only did I see Mike, I was on the court with Mike, and that was like, I told you, like I said, if the man above would have took my life then, boy, I lived a hell of a life, man, after seeing Mike.
He still sounds like a little kid when he talks about it.
That's his idol, Dave. I mean, that's that he admired growing up. I mean, that was, he says, I mean, in some of the other stuff he said too, like Michael Jordan was the person that got him through some of his darkest days as a young kid. because that's, I mean, he got a chance to watch him on television, and that's who he aspired to be. Just think about that. You walk up, and, you know, you're like, hey, Dad. And then all of a sudden, your dad moves over, and there's Michael Jordan standing there on the bench press.
It's got to be life-changing.
Rico, didn't every kid that grew up in the late 80s and 90s want to be like Michael Jordan? Like, they had a commercial, Be Like Mike.
Yep.
I love that commercial.
Every kid. I don't know one kid in any neighborhood that I lived in growing up that didn't want to be Michael Jordan when they went to the playground to play basketball. Not one. Think about that.
Oh, for God's sakes. That heals me. Do you have to play this, Santiago?
You have to, Dave.
Why?
How about this?
A dream I put like
Uncle, we give up. You win. Just you don't have to throw it in my face anymore.
But even down to how much money Michael Jordan was making, and he was always underpaid. But, you know, the last couple of years he started making, I mean, 97, 98, he made $33 million.
Yeah,
33, which if you adjusted it to today, would be like making almost $53 million a year. So back, I mean, you're talking about back in 97, 98, he was making 33. You know what I mean? And how long it took, I mean.
He doesn't need your Supermax.
Yeah, for players to get back to making that much money. And he was making it in 97, 98.
Yep. And that was a paltry sum compared to what he made off the court. That's
but here's the thing, Dave. They were paying him $33 million, and that didn't represent his impact on the bottom line for the team or the sport. Like, he was making $33 million. He was still underpaid.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't pay him enough.
Which is another, but again, I mean, to LeBron James's credit, which could, again, be part of, you know, pro LeBron, is you saw the economic impact LeBron James had when he left Cleveland.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, but I don't think LeBron James's economic impact was at the scale of Jordan's.
I don't know about that. When he left Cleveland, I think it might have been unprecedented.
Dave, when Jordan came into the league, the NBA was in 80 countries. When he left, they were in over 200.
Well, I'm not talking about the grand scheme of things. Well, I'm talking about solely on the one city that he left.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Cleveland and Chicago, you can't even compare them. Chicago's an international city. It's different. I don't think that's an apples to apples conversation. I'm just talking about the overall value that the players bring to their sport.
Yeah, I think the overall value was huge for Jordan, probably bigger for Jordan. But when you look at the effects that it had on one specific city of Cleveland, I think that was huge.
Well, it meant more to the people of Cleveland. I mean, Chicago has industry, a lot more industry than Cleveland does. So, I mean, Michael Jordan, I see where you're going. And the dynamics between the two players in the cities that they played in. I'm just saying, from a bottom line standpoint for the NBA and for the game of basketball, Michael Jordan was it. Michael Jordan was and still continues to be the standard. And I don't know that there's any player that can grow the game to those lengths. I don't think that we'll ever see that again.
Was Gretzky that guy in hockey, Rick? Or was he not the Michael Jordan? Because it felt like just numbers-wise in the dominance, he was close.
He's the unquestioned great one. I mean, that was one of the reasons why, you know, they end up trading him from Edmonton to, of all places, L.A., was to grow the game.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about, I mean, he's the greatest to ever do it, is Wayne Gretzky. Here's the other thing, though, too. I mean, to both of your points, Dave, I agree with you as far as LeBron James's economic impact on Cleveland. I think they estimated it was like $1 billion that Cleveland lost when LeBron left. As far as Chris is concerned, trailblazing, you know, what Jordan did for the NBA. But also, I mean, how about what LeBron James has done for NBA players? I mean, he's had a huge effect on NBA players, empowering NBA players, player movement, taking control of your career. LeBron James is responsible for a lot of that.
Tons of it. Social activism as well. He's been really big with that.
I mean, it's amazing to think that you come into the league straight out of high school, right? Your high school games are being nationally televised. Everyone's dialed in. You're paying attention. You can't wait to see this kid take that next step. Gets into the league, has been playing for, what is this, his 17th year?
Mm-hmm.
And the only negative thing you can say, as far as missteps are concerned, was him announcing on television that he was taking his talents to South Beach.
Which was still raising money for the Boys and Girls Club, right?
Exactly. He's still raising money for charity, but that's the one thing that people will point to.
Yeah, you're doing pretty well if that's the worst thing that you've done in 17 years of being the focal point of a league, right?
If it's all said and done, and that's the one thing that people can point to, yeah, I think he had a pretty,
remember that one time
pretty
he had
solid
that press
run.
Conference. It was terrible.
Yeah, he was bringing his talents. He decided he wanted to take his talents.
I'll never get over that. Rick, I know you love the caw. Here we go. The Belmont Stakes will take place during June. Will be shortened from its traditional length of a mile and a half, I guess down to a mile and a quarter. But still, it will be the first of the three Triple Crown races that will run. It will be at Belmont Stakes in New York. The Kentucky Derby will be Saturday, September the 5th. And the Preakness will be October the 3rd. So the first leg of the Triple Crown, Belmont Stakes in June, Belmont Park.
That's good news.
That's good news.
It's good news. And let's just keep stacking up days here. Stacking up days of good news. I like it.
Well, yesterday was a good news day. Today is a good news day. I mean, that's it. Just you know, day after day, good news,
well,
good
yesterday,
news, good news.
Yesterday was a double whammy, though. Yesterday we had some good sports news. And we also had some good vaccine news. Mm-hmm. So yesterday was a big Monday.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day.
Let's just keep up the momentum now.
That's right.
I had some good news this morning. I mean, I don't know if Cassie wanted a role play or whatever it is. It was like almost like she was New York State and I was professional sports.
Ah.
At around 5 a.m.-ish. It was great.
Really?
Oh, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Open for business.
Oh, really? Oh, very nice.
Open. It was great.
Somehow I'm going to get in trouble for this.
Why would you get in trouble for that? That was strictly insinuation.
Chris,
Dave's going to get in trouble for this because Dave allowed you to go down this road.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to quit.
I'm going to quit then.
I'm done.
You're not going to quit.
I'm going to get a text. I'm going to get a text that says, how
if I can't
dare
be me, then I don't want to do this.
That.
If I can't be me and I can't share stories about my life, then I don't want to do this. Mark it down. What is it, 11:59 on Tuesday? I'm done.
Rico, the suits are saying it because they have to say it.
I'm finished. I'm over.
They don't really want you to stop.
No,
Dave, you've got to get him to stop that. Got to stop.
I'll be done.
Because at 11:59, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and get into the last dance. And before you leave, can you give us one more cuddle, marry, trash, please?
Yes? I told you I'm done. It's it. When you pick up after break, I'm done. You won't be here for the noon hour. I'm off. I'm shutting my machine down.
All right. Well, you got to stay tuned for this because I think he's back.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.